I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers produce over 600 varieties, types, and styles of cheese. That's twice as much as any other state. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat & Three, it's our season 4 finale, and we're sharing some of our greatest kitchen joys.
Maybe most people consider making it too much work or too messy, but this is the food that's worth the work and worth the wait.
You always know where the thing is because you put it away the right way the first time.
You just sort of stand there in front, you know, with your hand on your hip and one leg outstretched, glass of wine in your hand, staring into the refrigerator going, okay, speak to me.
Oh yeah, what are you doing with the celery tonight?
I'm making a simple syrup for a gin cocktail with the celery. And I also found a recipe for a celery soup that's going to use up the celery and the potatoes and some of that dill that we still have hanging out in there.
Tune in and be inspired to find the joy in your kitchen. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat & Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd at Heritage Radio Network. Today we're going to hear interviews that I did in early July when I went to London to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Neil's Yard Dairy, which started out as a cheese shop 40 years ago and has progressively, due to the inspiration and hard work of Randolph Hodgson, supported the best cheesemakers in the UK. I used to work with 3D Cheese. At that point, it was run by Deborah Dickerson and Diana Solari. And our major client, one of our major clients, was Neil's Yard Dairy. And we sold the cheese, it might have been 6 or 7 weeks before they were getting it from a boat in America. We sold the cheese to the best cheese shops in America and Whole Foods. I was delighted to be back at Neil's Yard Dairy for the anniversary. I interviewed Jason Hines, David Lockwood, Sarah Stewart, and Bronwyn Percival. And it was a great party. Hello. This is Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd in London to celebrate Neil's Yard Dairy's 40th anniversary. Right now, sitting with Jason Hines to discuss cheese in Britain and the world and how Neil's Yard Dairy has had an impact. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Diane.
So, can you tell me your history first at Neil's Yard Dairy?
Obviously, the dairy is about to celebrate its 40th birthday tomorrow, in fact.
Tomorrow?
Would you believe on July the 4th?
How nice!
Isn't that a tidy date? And we'll be celebrating the actual party on the Sunday when people will be gathered. And I've been in the company for nearly 28 of those 40 years.
Not 40?
Not 40. Okay. I did not found the business. Randolph founded the business, and I joined it in 1992, February. So, yeah, okay. I'm coming up on my 28th year.
Okay. Now, how did you start at Neil's Yard?
Well, I was always keen to embark on a career when I left university, would you believe, to export British cheese. All my university friends thought I was taking crazy pills. It was the most preposterous idea.
So you had that idea to
export British
cheese.
Funnily enough, in recent, we moved to a new warehouse fairly recently, and as we moved, Katie, who looks after our people, went through some of the filing cabinets and funnily enough, came across my original application letter,
which
was a hoot.
What did it say?
It said that I wanted to export Great British cheese and that I wanted to come to learn about really good farmhouse British cheese. And that's why I wanted to come to Neil's Yard and I wanted to apply for a job in the shop. And so that's where I started.
So you started in the shop?
Yes.
Okay, and absolutely. Learned about British cheese, or did you already know?
I learned about, I knew some. I knew some. It was why I came to the decision to embark on a career to export British cheese, because I, as someone who was a passionate cheese consumer from a very young age, mm-hmm. had, by the time I got to my early 20s, realized, like not many people around me in the UK, that we in the UK actually have great cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only cheeses from France and Italy that were edible and delicious, mm-hmm. actually we have some of our own.
Yes.
And so... while I, but I felt I was in a minority, a very small minority of people that knew this, and I thought therefore this would be a really good career path because not many other people would be taking it.
Okay, you were right.
It would appear.
Now, did you sell cheese for a while? Yeah. How quickly did you become more than just a cheesemonger?
So I was selling cheese and continue to sell cheese in the shop, you know, most days for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But during the course of those early years, indeed in my first year there, it transpired that we had already begun shipping to a few customers in the US, the first of which was Zingerman's.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did my first trip to the US with Randolph Hodgson, the founder.
Uh-huh.
And that was in the year I began, 1992. And on that trip, I met... a few other of the owners of Zingerman's, one of whom we have just bumped into in a restaurant here in London.
Yes, yes, that's amazing. Mm. Paul...
Saginaw.
Okay, we just...
Serendipitous.
Yes, serendipitous, but he's here for the anniversary.
He is, yeah.
Yes,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. As he should be.
Absolutely.
Right, right. Okay, so, big question number one. How do you feel Neil's Yard Dairy has affected the position of cheese in Britain and then the world?
That's not a very small question.
No, it says big question.
Yeah,
number one.
No, it's a massive question. Yes, it's more than big.
Well, just answer briefly,
okay,
if possible.
I would, maybe this is not too big a statement, but I would suggest that a number of the cheeses that we've worked with and a number of the cheese makers that we work with over the 40 years and some of those who now have, you know, I would say well-known businesses around the world and successful businesses
certainly
might not have made it had it not been for the intervention of Randolph and the team in those early years and the intervention of Neil's Yard Dairy.
I would
businesses like potentially Colston Bassett, mm-hmm. Kirkham's Lancashire, Appleby's Cheshire. You know, there's a list of what we might now refer to as sort of household British cheese brands.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the word brand, but anyway, you know what I mean.
Yes.
Who I think would probably not have made it had Randolph not arrived with Neil's Yard Dairy and mm-hmm. sought these really high quality British cheeses out, because the market supposedly was not looking for cheeses of that quality. They were looking for the market was supposedly looking for cheeses that were cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he was not interested in selling those. And so Neil's Yard Dairy made it its mission to find the best British cheese and sell those.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to tell the listeners that we're near an arch way mm-hmm. so that you might hear the
trains
going
passing
by, because yeah. we're in an arch or outside of an arch that is where Neil's Yard Dairy lived and newly lives.
So to be clear, the arch is essentially a space underneath a railway viaduct, which is arch-shaped, and so there's a long series of these archways that run perpendicular to the direction of the viaduct.
Mm-hmm.
Actually very good spaces for storing cheese.
Uh-huh.
Built by the Victorians,
who
in the much of these many of these structures were built in the 19th century.
Excellent.
So they built the, you know, the Victorians had a reputation for building large, large, strong buildings. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, the spaces offer themselves up as really pretty good urban caves. Mm-hmm. The temperatures are certainly at the center, because they're quite long. You know, the temperature at the center of these doesn't really change very much, because you're fairly well insulated by brick. Mm-hmm. So if you're a cheese, that's a good thing.
Okay, if you're a person, not so good?
It's not so bad, but it's better if you're a cheese.
Okay. So I just wanted to tell the listeners what they were hearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so I have big question number two.
Yeah.
What's next? What should Niels Jord Dairy do now or in the future to protect British cheese or all cheese and share it even more with the world?
Well, our mission is to, our stated mission is to improve British cheese. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that if we're successful in that endeavor, then we will have worked to, as part of a broader community of people who are also supporting British cheese, because we are not, you know, we are not the only ones doing this work. There are more and more really high quality businesses in the UK championing British cheese, and that's a great thing.
Okay.
40 years ago, we were, I think, more or less the only ones. Mm-hmm. And now there are more. And so that's good. That's good for the industry. Mm-hmm. It's good for the cheesemakers to have mm-hmm. more than one customer championing their cause.
Yes.
And so I would like to think that, you know, in the next 40 years, mm-hmm. That what we will see is a really vibrant, community of cheesemakers coming in to the industry that are young and old, and that see that there is a career, that there is a future for them, because making cheese is not just a worthy endeavor, but actually a financially sustainable proposition. And so I think that, you know, where 40 years ago and even 30 years ago, cheesemakers and farmers couldn't really consider their cheese making endeavor as a worthwhile, you know, as a financial, viable financial proposition.
Mm-hmm.
Now more and more can, and that is an environment that's going to encourage younger people who are really passionate about cheese making to actually consider it as a vocation. Mm. And so I think in this, you know, I think that you know, as the community becomes more diverse, that we will see people making more traditional British cheeses, like what we call the territorials, the Lancashires, the Cheshires, the Fillies, Double Gloucesters, Leicesters, and so on. You know, I'd like to see more of those producers than the very small number that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing more producers from, you know, more producers making non-traditional British types.
I saw French styles. A lot of goat and sheep at the London cheesemongers.
Yeah.
Today.
Exactly. Yeah, so no. And we supply all of that cheese to them. So mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So I would say that 25, 30 years ago when I started, the cheeses that were made to those more continental style recipes
mm-hmm.
Were nowhere near as world class as they
right,
are now,
right?
And so that's
right.
great.
There were some
so
amazing
we now,
tastes that
yeah.
I've had today.
So we now have some. We have a much greater diversity mm-hmm. in the range of farmhouse cheeses that are made in the UK, and that's mm-hmm. fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to see, you know, I would like to see more producers coming into the industry championing those varieties that have been native to the UK for centuries, and I'd like to see, you know, the public and cheese shops embracing those varieties more than I think they have in the last 40
okay.
years,
okay.
much more in the mm-hmm. next 40.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Goodbye.
All right.
Bye for now. This is Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd in London to celebrate Niels Jord Dairy's 40th anniversary. Right now, I'm sitting with David Lockwood to discuss cheese in Britain and the world and how Niels Jord has had an impact. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Diane.
So, can you tell me a bit of your history with Neil's Yard?
So, I came over here in 1991 to learn about maturing and selling British cheeses, mainly maturing. Before that, I'd been working at Zingerman's as the manager with Deborah Dickerson.
Aha.
And we were the first ones to import the Neil's Yard dairy cheeses it was in 1990. And that's when I met Randolph Hodgson and Jane Scotter, who was a partner in the business at the time. And they invited me to come and mature with them if they wanted. And I thought it was a great idea and took that opportunity, came over for 2 years. We were still in Neil's Yard itself.
In Covent Garden.
In Covent Garden, around the corner from where the shop is now. We moved out there in July 92. And it was a lot of fun because we had different maturing spaces to work in and to learn about. And I went back to the States in the summer of 93 because my papers were up.
Uh-huh.
And
we are hearing the trains going by again in this portion of the show.
And continued selling Neil's Yard dairy cheeses, working with Jason Heinz, who's now my partner in the business. We were all over the place, talking to lots of really interesting people.
Were you working at Zingerman's?
I know. When I went back, I worked independently, so I was doing work for them. I did work for the Vea family, who bring in Lesternel oil. Did work at Oakville Grocery, at Dean and DeLuca, just a bunch of different things. But my favorite and what I thought about most was cheese and Neil's Yard Dairy. And went in back, did a graduate degree at Georgetown, an MBA, and even worked a summer on Wall Street as an intern.
Oh, my gosh.
It wasn't.
What were you thinking?
Exactly. I was thinking, this is not for me. And
did
then,
you know it beforehand?
No. No, I wanted to try it because... Uh-huh. That's the kind of thing you do. But then we're speaking with Randolph the whole time, and he's like, come back, be a partner. And so then when I finished Georgetown in 98 and moved back to London that summer, I've been here since.
Oh, wow. So you have many years in cheese business and at Neil's Yard.
Yeah. So a nice smattering of different things. Went to American Cheese Society conferences in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And early.
Oh, in the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning. Judged with Jean-Claude Lejeune at the conference in 1991. Mm. Still active in American Cheese Society on the judging and competition committee, and also always try and attend the conferences.
Mm-hmm.
So keep my hand in that. Mm-hmm. Do lots with cheese here and have, through the dairy, made friends, acquaintances, and with people throughout the cheese business in Europe and the mm-hmm. States. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Now, okay, big question number one. How do you feel Neil's Yard Dairy has affected the position of cheese in Britain and then the world?
Neil's Yard Dairy. How have we affected cheese position in the world?
In Britain. The world.
Big question. I think that we were really lucky to have Randolph Hodgson as a founder of the business, because he's truly a contrarian. And that really speaks to me, because I'm a bit of a contrarian too. And so at a time when other people were always looking to the continent or to factories for a cheaper, more consistent bit of cheese, Randolph was more interested in looking at what it could be, what it would be like, not necessarily what was in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the dairy became involved with buying cheese from a number of producers who were then encouraged to continue making cheese the way they had been making it historically, and this in turn meant there was a bit of a future for cheeses that were reflective of British farmhouse cheesemaking tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's evolved quite a bit since, since
91.
Well, 91, but but I was thinking more the turn, you know, the early 1900s. Uh-huh. And so when it's one of those things when people talk about traditional, it's a word that kind of gets a bit under my skin. Mm. Because what is traditional? A lot of what people call traditional today was invented in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So if we call it historically accurate or historically representative of the UK cheesemaking tradition, mm-hmm. Whatever, a little side pedantic side point, but Randolph basically said, this is interesting stuff, we could sell it if people tasted it. And
New York has always been known for handing people the cheese.
So we give tastes.
Yeah.
And,
off the knife.
Off the knife. And we, because British people are a bit shy, we try and do that before anyone has to speak.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice technique.
They did that to me in the shop at Borough Market.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because if they hadn't, they would have been in trouble. Yeah. But the way we sell cheese is quite different. The influence internally, domestically, it has provided a place for cheesemakers to sell cheeses that aren't supermarket cheeses, mm-hmm. in a better way. I think our influence in the States, it's harder for me to speak to directly because I'm not there, mm-hmm. but I know that a lot of people who are really good cheesemakers and retailers have spent time with us, mm-hmm. On the cheesemaking side, you know, say Andy Hatch and Matteo, mm-hmm. and my brother-in-law Alex Cast at Chapel Hill Creamery. Oh. And you know,
I didn't know he was your brother-in-law.
Yes, Alex is Jennifer's youngest brother.
That way.
Yeah. And so, I mean, on the cheese side and on the Munger side, we've had loads of people come and work with us, visit us, mm-hmm. From...
And you're very generous with your time and attention to everybody from America, I feel.
We try to give back. It's really important. Mm-hmm. I imagine we are. But I think it's a good thing. I don't want to work in a place where you wouldn't be.
Right.
And to be blunt, people in the States have been, and in Europe, have been very generous with their time for us as, mm-hmm. well. So, mm-hmm. I don't do it as a tip for tat kind of thing, but
it works.
It does work. It works. And I think it's a really good thing. And I think it's kind of special about our industry, because people are really open and not afraid to share, not, mm-hmm. afraid to, mm-hmm. tell. It's been trickier in Europe, actually, in some ways, because it is much more of a closed shop, mm-hmm. Especially in a place like France, where there, mm-hmm. Competition is a much more serious issue. You know, we don't have that many producers, so, mm-hmm. it's really in their best interest to band together and, mm-hmm. to try and keep the whole thing going. Whereas in France, if you're a farmhouse revolution maker, you're one of over 40. Mm. And that's a totally different world. Mm. And so
with a small cheese.
With a small cheese. but it does, you know, one of the things that Randolph did and we continue to do is, you know, we don't sell cheese as Neil's Yard Dairy Cheddar. We sell it as Montgomery's Cheddar. Mm-hmm. And then we say it's aged and or selected, mm-hmm. and aged by Neil's Yard Dairy. Mm. But that was not the way things worked back in the day.
Right.
And that so stuff like that, it's
important.
So you
kept the name, claimed the aging.
Well, or selection or whatever, right, or just that we work with them.
Right.
But I guess what's important is, for us, we needed to ensure that the producers got the recognition they needed, because we need them to stay in business,
right,
in order to have a British cheese industry.
Right. Okay, what do you think, big question number two.
Ready.
What do you think, what's next? What should Niels Jaar Dairy do now or in the future to protect British cheese or all cheese and share it even more with the world?
Wow. We're struggling with this right now. We're not struggling. Mm-hmm. We're kind of grinding our way through it of what's next.
Though you and certainly have expanded.
We have expanded, and to date we've expanded somewhat organically. Our new our new premises is we took it on because our old place was going to get monumentally expensive very quickly, and by taking on this space, we're actually, as of next year, paying less rent for nearly double the space.
And it looks so much nicer.
Oh.
I mean, had the old place gotten nicer? I haven't been there in a long time.
Well, it's gone now. But I don't know when you were there last, but there were bits that were good. There were bits that weren't so good. But you could say the same about here. If I could.
This is very nice looking right where we are in the Arch 6 entrance, visitor's entrance.
Yeah, it's similar to where we were. I mean, we control it better, so we could do more with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are things that aren't right about it either. That if I could switch the clock back, I would definitely change.
Okay,
but
of course.
Where we're going. So the question is, how do we expand? And let me rewind. We're a business that spends a little bit of time staring at our navel, and when we do that, we talk about things like missions and objectives and that sort of thing. And our mission is to improve British cheese, and so everything we do kind of needs to hang from that. And we need to understand where we're going to improve British cheese. What do we need to do? We know we need to ensure that what we do is not like some sort of charity boutique kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be economically sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, things that say we're doing a good job are when generations succeed one another in a cheesemaking business.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, with the Applebee's, Paul and Sarah, the third generation, have taken it over.
Mm-hmm.
That's success.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to see more of that. We want to see more people coming into the industry and doing a great job making cheeses. We're really keen to buy
expand
and sell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we're also looking at how can we get the industry strong enough that people want to open up cheese shops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how can we get it strong enough and economically strong enough to make it so that people see being a cheesemonger as a viable career?
Right. Right.
And so these are big, fat, long-term goals that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're really important.
Thank you, David Lockwood, for joining me today. It's been delightful to talk to you, as usual.
Since the mid-1800s, before Wisconsin was even recognized as a state, its resident cheesemakers have been putting the art into artisan cheese. When early settlers from Switzerland, Germany, and Italy came to Wisconsin, they brought their cheesemaking expertise with them. They chose Wisconsin because the terroir reminded them of the homes they'd left behind in Northern Europe. The soil and water of Wisconsin is nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin's cheesemakers draw from their rich European heritage and cheesemaking traditions, and combine them with incredible innovation to produce half of the nation's specialty cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers never stop experimenting, trying to improve, and dreaming of your next favorite cheese that has yet to be imagined. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
Hi, this is Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd in London to celebrate Neal's Yard Dairy's 40th anniversary. Right now, I'm sitting with Sarah Stewart to discuss cheese in Britain and the world and how Neal's Yard has had an impact. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
So, can you tell me your history with Neal's Yard?
So, I have been at Neal's Yard for 20 years. I started in the shop in Covent Garden, and I worked there for a couple of months, and then Jason realised that I could use a computer. So, very quickly, I started doing the paperwork for the cheese that we send to America. And at that stage, it was quite small. So called some of the customers, did all the paperwork, tasted the cheese, packed the cheese, worked with Deborah and Diana and did some of the trips. And at that stage, we were shipping every 2 weeks. And I used to taste the cheese that we were sending to America with Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
And
or did you do the meetings on the phone?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we would call customers from the phone and also talk to Deborah a lot and send faxes still at that stage of what we were tasting.
Mm-hmm.
What was it
mm-hmm.
What it was tasting like. And through tasting with Randolph every 2 weeks, really got to understand, you know, what we were looking for and really enjoyed the tasting. And when the buyer at that stage left, I started doing that.
Started buying the cheese from the cheesemakers in this country.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So working with Randolph and David Lockwood and doing some of the selection visits and just, you know, the ordering, making sure that
mm-hmm.
we had the right amount.
Learning more and more.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that really started from choosing the cheese to go to America.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a break, and when I came back after a year, I started working on the floor. So always working with the cheese and
selling it, cheese
or looking after the cheese in the maturing
mm-hmm. okay.
rooms, and really enjoyed being on my feet and doing the physical work of the affinage.
Uh-huh.
And
so learning another whole part.
Yeah. And I guess when I first started, everybody did a bit of everything. So right from the get-go, I would have always been looking after the cheese, you know, turning the cheeses. Maybe that was one day a week, or, you
mm-hmm.
know, you would have, everybody would have done a bit of that. And then as the company got bigger, there became a dedicated team
mm-hmm.
cheese shift,
mm-hmm.
which is still what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And working with that, and that's really, you know, what I've been doing ever since.
Okay. So you are now a partner?
Yes.
And that is with David Lockwood and Jason Hines and who else?
John Tash.
Okay.
He's the FD. Randolph is Hodgson is still a partner. Anita Leroy and Bob Coleman is a director but not a partner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're the newest partner?
Yes, the newest.
Okay.
As of this year.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, nice to be a partner in my 20th year.
So did you love cheese when you started at
yeah.
Neal's Yard?
Always loved cheese. And when I saw there was a job advert to work in the shop at Covent Garden, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I like cheese. I'll do that for a year or two until I decide what I really want to do.
Right,
and
right.
Then,
it sucked you in.
Absolutely. I've totally been sucked in. And You know, Niger Dairy is such a, you know, a great place to work, and it really, you know, it's got a nice ethos, and the people are really amazing, and so, yeah, it's definitely my home.
Okay, so my first big question is, how do you feel Niels Jord Dairy has affected the position of cheese in Britain and then even the world?
So, you know, I think when Niels Jord Dairy first started, the likelihood of raw milk cheeses continuing
was slim.
Yeah. And so I think from that point of view, you know, Randolph's worked with other people to make sure the industry can continue. This is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And
and that was his purpose.
Definitely. And he, you know, he's always been, like, the producers have always been front and centre of what we do, and especially what he did, and making sure that they get paid well and paid quickly so that they can continue to do what they do, and just being an advocate for the amazing things that they do and the amazing cheese that they produce. And I don't know that there was ever a, in the beginning, like, we want to showcase the, you know, the most amazing British cheeses in the world to get them out there. But it was just, you know, Zingerman's worked really hard to get the cheeses from the Niger Dairy over there, and it's sort of accidental. And
because of the relationships.
Yeah, so I guess when it first, when they must have come to visit and enjoyed the cheeses and sort of, you know, made it so it had to happen that we...
And I just met one of the owners of Zingerman's, Paul...
Saginaw, yeah.
Outside.
Yes, yeah, so he's here for the 40th birthday too.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. Yeah, it's nice that that relationship continues. And, yeah, so, you know, just trying to make sure that we've got amazing cheese.
We just had an interruption of a coffee edition. Okay, so that's great. Now, what next? What's next for Niels Jord? What should they be doing now or in the future to protect British cheese or all cheese and share it with the world? Or what's next?
Well, I think, you know, at its core, Niels Jord Dairy is about the territorial. So the very traditional British cheeses, you know, like Appleby's Cheshire, Kirkham's Lancashire's, Lancashire. And I think working with the producers to make sure that those cheeses continue forever, because, you know, they're really the last of their kind, and they're really the most important British type of cheeses. So I think that's the direction of what Niels Jord Dairy should be doing. And yeah, giving the opportunity for hopefully new producers to come into the industry, so they've got a good marketplace to sell their cheese, and to encourage, you know, second generation, third generation, to stay with the family businesses, and hopefully bring new people into the business.
I took the tour with Owen, and I saw all the cheeses we don't get in the United States. The small ones, the goat ones, just amazing bunch of English cheeses that we don't even see.
And
Are they traditional or are they new to Britain?
No, not. I just think most of them are, you know, from French style.
Yes, yeah. Yes, but made in Britain.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. So yeah. everything that we have here is British and Irish. We have a few continentals, but the some of the soft cheeses that we sell, I really feel their competition for their French equivalent. So
mm-hmm.
We sell Innis Log and Innis Brick, and in the same way that we have really worked on our maturing of soft cheeses, those guys as producers have really worked on how they're making
mm-hmm.
and
are they raw?
Yeah.
Ah, and France can they still send raw here?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we,
because they don't send it to us anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, because probably the it has to be 60 days old by mm-hmm. for it to be in America, but over here that we don't have that restriction,
mm-hmm.
which is incredible.
Right.
And those are a lot of, I think, maybe in the last 20 years, a lot of the new producers have been in the smaller soft cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps more recently, people have been making more territorial.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a few new territorial producers, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for
pleasure.
Talking with me. And I just want to say goodbye to Sarah Stewart. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. And the party's coming up.
Yeah.
Right? Excellent. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Let me introduce my last guest, Bronwyn Percival, who has already been on Cutting the Curd discussing her fine book, Reinventing the Wheel. While not a partner at Neil's Yard, she's been there a long time and has a lot to say. Welcome, Bronwyn. I'm trying to collect people who work at Neil's Yard Dairy to ask them different questions about the anniversary and about the momentousness of Neil's Yard Dairy. And welcome.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here talking with you.
Great. So anyway, my first question is for our audience to sort of put you in the cheese world. How long have you been at Neil's Yard Dairy? How did you start cheese? Can you give us a little info about your cheese life?
I started at Neil's Yard Dairy in August of 2005, and I think, like so many people who work here, sort of approached the job as a temporary position that would take me up through Christmas of that year, and then I would go on to find something else to do and have a real career. And one thing led to the other, and in fact, I've realized over the ensuing years that cheese can be quite a fulfilling thing to dedicate one's life to.
14 years later. Have you been here throughout?
Yes, okay. Consistently through that time. I took a 2-month sort of sabbatical to work in the lab of Rachel Dutton and Ben Wolf at Harvard in 2014. And mm-hmm. again, I'm incredibly grateful to the hires up at Neil's Yard Dairy for having the vision and the the generosity to allow me to go and do that.
Mm-hmm. So you got to learn in the lab.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think one of the things that strikes me is how permeable the conversations within the cheese world are with other things going on within the scientific community and within other industries as well, things like the wine industry. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I've felt has been the most enriching about my work here is being able to look outside the cheese industry to draw in ideas that we can apply to our everyday work. And so that 2 months with Ben and Rachel was really, I would say, quite important because it really gave me a much better idea of how microbes work, how microbes think, to use a very anthropomorphic term, but how we can sort of understand them as our allies, as our foes, and really apply that knowledge about the big structural ideas about microbiology to our work with cheese here.
Okay. So now, when you started Were you behind the counter at first?
Yes, I was a cheesemonger at the Burra shop. Mm-hmm. And I did that for the first, must have been through Christmas, so mm-hmm. the first 4 months. And then after that, I took a part-time job working with Anne Hastings in the quality assurance department part-time mm-hmm. and then working behind the counter for the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. And then when I had been here for about a year, Sarah Stewart, who mm-hmm. I think you've just spoken to, who was the buyer at the time, had decided to go off with her partner Ewan and travel around the world. And so that left a space in the position of buyer, which I was incredibly lucky to have offered to me.
Okay. So pretty quickly you became a buyer of English cheeses, or?
I mean, of all the cheeses that uh-huh. we were buying. Mm-hmm. We don't really differentiate between different kinds of cheeses in our buying department. Mm-hmm. Now I work with a colleague, Terry, mm-hmm. Who does the day-to-day buying, while I manage that and also the quality assurance for the company. My role...
Now, quality assurance in terms of what you buy, or the whole shebang? The whole warehouse?
The quality assurance for the entire company.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, it is big, which covers everything from sort of supplier approval and making sure that the cheeses that we buy are not only safe, but also good tasting, and helping people solve any problems that they're having in either of those areas, but also overseeing...
Taster safety.
Mm-hmm. And also overseeing our internal sort of systems to make sure that we are compliant and always working in a way that's protecting the integrity of the cheese that we sell. Mm-hmm. So I have a colleague, Than, who works with me on quality assurance as well, mm-hmm. and I oversee both departments.
So big question number one, how do you feel Neil's Yard Dairy has affected the position of cheese in Britain mm-hmm. and or the world?
Big question. I mean, for me, the story of cheese in Britain is one that had a really dark chapter in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And could see that as the dairy industry actually grew, a lot of the cheese making faded into history, that a lot of people who had been making cheese on farms, as all cheese would have been made 150 years ago, mm-hmm. Gradually gave up as there were better options for them in selling liquid milk, or if farming didn't make sense for them anymore. And mm-hmm. so we lost a tremendous amount during that time. And I think where Neil's Yard Dairy really played this pivotal role was in the early 1980s, when the very last few farmhouse cheesemakers were hanging on for dear life. It provided a conduit to take those cheeses
to appreciate them.
Yeah, to appreciate them and to offer them in a new light to customers who really just thought that British cheese was only these plastic wrap blocks of supermarket cheese, and that the only good cheeses came from places like France and Italy. It provided them with a gastronomic context and celebrated them in the way that paved the way for this real resurgence of farmhouse cheese making that we're seeing now.
And do you feel Randolph was primarily behind that?
Yeah, no, I think that his great achievement was seeing that there was this opportunity, that there was this disconnect within the market between the producers who were making something interesting and the consumers who would love to buy it. And organizing that all around the idea of flavor was another really important part of it, that in order to be sold properly, these cheeses, which did have, I can imagine then, just as we do now, a fair amount of batch variation, you need to be able to buy according to flavor and to know what you're taking home, to have the confidence that you're buying the right thing, but also to give people the opportunity to choose according to the best flavor. Mm-hmm. When you set up that sort of Darwinian environment across the shop counter, and when you are really offering people the opportunity to taste before they buy, you reward the cheeses, not according to a pretty label or according to a cheap price, but according to the thing which needed to be saved at that mm-hmm. point.
Mm-hmm. And so Neil's Yard, did they pioneer the tasting? Because even now when you walk into a shop, you're handed a knifeful of cheese so quickly. Like, they don't know who you are, and they're handing you a knifeful of cheese.
Now, I wasn't around in the early 80s visiting cheese shops, so uh-huh. I can't speak to that right. with absolute conviction, right. but I do have a sense that that retail style of taste before you buy, and almost being tracked down and forced to taste something before a piece could be cut for you and it would be put into your bag was an innovation that Neil Chardari championed.
Yes.
And I think it's very easy to take that sort of approach that we really take for granted these days of you go into a cheese shop and of course you're going to be asked to taste everything.
Right.
Sort of
some
for granted.
More than others.
Some more than others. And it always shocks me sometimes when I go into really good cheesemonger in France and
they don't do that.
And they don't do that. I feel like
you're supposed to know what you want.
Exactly. Or your patrician cheesemonger will help you. You will tell them what your event is and how many people and they will prepare the best cheese plate for you.
Right.
And you know, sometimes it's nice to be surprised, but I do think that it's also really important to give people complete information.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if I taste a cheese and it's tasting really, really amazing, I might buy twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I don't get to taste beforehand, I might be more wary about the amount that I'm willing to spend.
I was at La Fromagerie yesterday.
It's a wonderful
and
shop.
And it's, you know, mostly European. But they do have some Neil Jard and American even.
Mm-hmm.
But they were pushing the cheese on me immediately.
Uh-huh.
And once you're in the cold room, it's like, oh, taste this, taste this, taste this. Like, oh, no problem. And it's so refreshing in that European setting to be getting to taste a lot of cheese.
Sort of, yes, the best of two different worlds.
Right.
And I think it's yeah, for me that approach to cheese selling is really fundamental.
Mm-hmm. Okay, big question number two.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it.
All right.
I want to know what you think Neil's Yard should do now or next or to help things or, you know, what is next for Neil's Yard Dairy?
I mean, are you asking me as my personal opinion or?
Well, maybe first the company opinion and then your personal opinion.
I think from the perspective of Neil's Yard Dairy's
mission,
mm-hmm. you know, they talk a lot about, or I should say we talk a lot about our mission being to improve British cheese. And I think that that is a laudable mission. And
mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that also plays heavily on those conversations is how can we make sure that we're making money? Because clearly, if we're losing money hand over fist, there's no way that we can accomplish the goals that we have of supporting the industry.
Right.
And so the question of how much can we grow and maintain that that commitment to all the things that we've held dear for the longest time. I think there is a genuine commitment on the part of the directors to honor that that commitment to farmhouse British cheeses and raw milk and real flavors while growing the company and while maintaining or building profitability.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like a very dry answer, but without that, nothing else is possible.
Well, and they've expanded to the old arches, to these arches, where they're kind of becoming a business.
I think these new arches are much more purpose-built, much more fit for purpose than where we were working before. And certainly I know that it's much easier to work here. And they're designed for a particular amount of cheese. And I know that we have now a 30 to 35-year lease on these new arches. So it sort of sets the stage for what the scope of the company is going to be during that time. And
aren't you renting to other food businesses that are like-minded?
Yes, I mean, the whole Spa Terminus project, which I'm sure the others have told you about, is very exciting because it's sort of bringing together, once again, this community of food producers to try to change a conversation within the UK. And so to see all of those businesses flourishing in a shared environment is really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, so how about your personal opinion? What do you think cheese should be doing now?
I think that's probably the better question. Where should cheese be going now that we've accomplished so much? Because I think the cheese industry has accomplished a huge amount in the last 40 years all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to have different conversations than just can farmhouse cheesemakers survive. You know, I've had three conversations today at this party already with different cheesemakers who have been attending conferences on things like sustainability and the impact of agriculture on the environment. And I think as the dairy industry stands right now, we need to be very cognizant of the way in which the larger conversation is changing and make sure that we are positioning ourselves in a place where we're part of the solution rather than part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's absolutely possible.
So I just want to thank you, Bronwyn, for
coming on the show during a party.
Mm-hmm.
It's been delightful to talk to you as usual. And I look forward to your next book or project.
Thanks so much, Diane. It's great to talk with you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.